show is a proud member of Friends in Tech at friendsintech.com.
You're listening to Geek Cred, episode number 15. Hello there and welcome to Geek Cred. I'm your host, Steve Rickyberg. Thanks for listening. Now, Geek Cred is the show that gives you the inside scoop on everything geek, from tech to sci-fi to games. So I want to welcome all the new listeners and returning listeners, welcome back. Now, to get the contact info out of the way, you can check out the main website at www.geekcred.net. If you want to email me, geekcred@geekcred.net or the voicemail line, 206-424-9125. Now, coming up on this episode, I have an interview with J.G. Birdsall and Company from Venus Rises. But before we get started, how are you all doing? It has been way too long since I've talked to you. I really want to thank you for your patience with the delay in getting this out. I was sick, I was better, and I relapsed. It's hard to podcast when you're not feeling well. So I want to thank you guys for your support in that. Now, the podcast expo I mentioned that I was going to, that was awesome. I had a great time there, especially hanging out with some of you. I'm not going to name names because I'll forget someone, but you know who you are. Really underscores the whole discussion we had on Geek Cred Live. I never met any of these people before, but it was just like we were old friends, so it was great. Now, you probably noticed the stinger at the beginning of the episode. If you didn't see this announcement on the website, I am proud to say that Geek Cred is now a member of Friends in Tech. I've been supporting these guys for a long time, so it was a real honor to be among them now. Check out all the great shows they have over there at www.friendsintech.com. Well, that's enough jabbering from me, so let's move on to trivia. But before we get started, I do want to give a shout out to Debdrup. Last time, he actually answered the trivia question correct, and I didn't give him credit. So, good job, my friend. Last episode's trivia question was, the script for what movie was written during shooting breaks on the set of Raiders of the Lost Ark? Now, the correct answer to that question would be E.T., the Extraterrestrial. This was correctly answered by Chuck Tomasi, and here he goes again with the trivia, Debdrup. So you guys have some geek cred. Now, this episode's trivia question is, what successful organization began with an application called Backrub? What successful organization began with an application called Backrub? Think you know the answer? Email me at geekcred@geekcred.net or call the voicemail line at 206-424-9125. Well, now that we've got that done, let's move on to the interview about Venus Rises. I'd like to welcome the crew from the upcoming show Venus Rises. So why don't you guys go around and introduce yourselves?
All right, I'll start. My name's Jason Birdsall, and I'm the writer-producer of Venus Rises.
I'm Arnon Kularaja. I'm a modeler and sometime animator for the 3D CG elements for Venus Rises.
Hi, I'm Stephen Gilbert. And I'm in the UK. I do CG stuff, so I do the visual effects.
All right, so what is Venus Rises?
Well, Venus Rises is a four-part vidcast series to premiere on the web. You'll also be able to see it on Illusion Sci-Fi On Demand.
So how did you get into filmmaking?
Well, actually, I guess it started off where I drew these little comics quite a few years back. My father had a Beta camera when VHS and Beta were still duking it out. And I started to put the comics onto video, and I started to do some small animations with them. It kind of branched out from there, and I started to include my friends, and my high school had a television program I got involved in, and then I pretty much, that cemented me into filmmaking, and I went to film school, and here I am producing Venus Rises.
Very nice. So what are some of your influences in science fiction? How did you get into the whole genre?
Oh, I was always into science fiction. My parents pretty much gave me the little taste when they took me to go see Star Wars in the theater. From there, I've been an addict ever since. So I guess also when DVDs started to come into the market and I was able to just waste a lot of hours in the video stores combing through looking for the really obscure titles.
So how did Venus Rises come about and become what it is today?
I started off browsing the web, and I saw these guys were making some animations showing ships duking it out with one another, and I thought that was pretty cool. I wanted to try to do that. So I self-taught myself how to do animations in Lightwave. So what I did was I decided to make the ships duke it out, Star Wars, Star Trek, and I wanted to build more interesting story plots, actually bring characters in, dive deeper into the storytelling. So I went and tried to write a Star Wars fan film. Made a really simple treatment, tried to get people to join, didn't really find anybody. So I switched gears and tried to make a Star Trek fan film. That I actually dove into the actual process, made a 6-episode story arc and everything else, and again, no takers. So I thought at that point, it'd probably be best if I tried to do something original. And that's where VR came about.
So give me a little background of the story, a little teaser of what Venus Rises is about.
Well, Venus Rises starts off with the Earth becoming uninhabitable very quickly. There's a polar shift, increased solar flares, 90% of the Earth's population gets wiped out. What's left is the government's trying to scramble to keep order, and the corporations take it upon themselves, corporations/upper class, to keep order. They give the working class a goal, and they focus them on getting to Mars. So they use the moon, they strip mine the moon to get to Mars, and once the corporations get themselves established on Mars, they weren't ready to share. So they convinced the workers that helped mine the moon, we need more resources. There's not enough for you to come with the influx of the population. So we'll send you off to Venus, and you'll mine Venus. And once you fulfill your contracts, you'll be brought to Mars to live the life of luxury. But as years went by, a few people in Venus realized that Mars was never going to cash in on their promise. So how it goes is we come into the storyline with Venus and Mars already having escalating tensions. Sam is a private in the Mars Defense Directory, been positioned on the International Space Station 50 years plus. It's set up as a refueling depot where the Mars and Venus cannot get to one another without fueling at the station. It's falling apart. It still has the 80s and 90s technology that it went up with originally, and it's a complete mess. Sam's there with his friend Nathan. They're old academy buddies. Nathan is a blue-collar soldier. He follows orders to the T. Sam was placed there by his father, who was instrumental in the formation of the Mars Directorate. And his father knows Nathan, and he was hoping that a little bit of Nathan's attitude would rub off on Sam. After all that, that's pretty much where the story starts up.
How did you go about recruiting and casting people for the show?
Through podcasts, actually. I think, Chris, you came after listening to Lynn's Sci-Fi podcast, right?
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
And Arn is actually a friend to Julia, who's my production manager, and she also plays Ariana. So
yeah, we went to school together.
Engineering school.
Yeah, I went to engineering school with Julia, and then when I finished up at Vancouver Film School with a 3D program, I was talking to her one day, and she was like, oh, well, I'm doing this sci-fi show, and we really need people who can do 3D. Would you be interested? And I was like, oh, that'd be great. So here I am.
Very nice, very nice.
And Chris, didn't you do things with NASA too?
Yeah, I've done a couple of little things. But the latest thing I've done was actually for National Geographic, just moving some models over for a guy. But I'm also working on my own sort of moon race history DVD come video that I'm trying to get behind.
These guys really are the ones who design the look of VR on screen. They help it keep to the science fact that I wanted VR to really express.
Well, the sets helped a lot with that. and seeing definitely seeing the really nicely built sets.
Yes. Speaking of those sets, they are definitely very ambitious, to say the least. What went into designing and building them? How long did it take to do?
Well, a lot of eBay went into them. The bigger ones took about a month and a half to 2 months, working on the weekends a lot. The smaller ones were easier. A lot of leftover scrap wood I was able to piece together. Seven sets together total with a green screen studio.
Wow. What went into the design of those? What was your philosophy going into that?
I did a lot of research. I went online, looked at a lot of NASA photos, submarine photos. I actually have NASA modules and a lot of Army surplus in, mixed in on them to try to keep the authenticity of it all. I wanted to keep everything interactive. I didn't want to do green screen. I wanted the actors to be able to interact with the sets. It just comes off more real, more natural.
Not to mention it's a lot less work for us.
That too.
So what is the most challenging part of doing Venus Rises?
Getting everyone's schedules to line up. A lot of it, everybody is doing this on their free time and trying to sync everybody's schedules up when everybody works day jobs is actually one of the harder parts to do.
It's probably pretty hard given that the whole show is pretty much being produced out of Jason's pockets.
Empty pockets.
Yeah, I was about to say, how are you able to afford to do this?
Freelance. I do a lot of freelance work. I pretty much have a day job myself that on Revel 3D. I try to pimp my abilities out.
So you don't have any investors. This is all coming out of your pocket.
Oh yes, absolutely. This is completely us. No investors whatsoever.
Wow. Definitely impressive with what you've done, I think.
Hi, I'm James from Nobody's Listening from NLcast.com, and my brother's here.
And I'm David.
And we do a little podcast.
It's nothing big.
We just tell stories.
We tell a story about a go-kart ride that felt like a roller coaster.
We did one about a basic ghost man that scared the crap out of some kids.
Yes, and we did another one about hating my sister for life.
We're welcoming you to come and enjoy our stories. We also want to give you a chance to tell your own.
Yeah.
We're not the only ones with funny stories.
No, there are tons of people in the world. There's a couple hundred thousand, I thought.
So we want you to share your stories as well.
Uh-huh.
But you can only do that if you check us out at NLcast.com. Or look us up in iTunes.
Yeah.
You will enjoy stories, weekly updates, news, and email. And we also do something called Recap Song.
Recap Song.
Recap Song. It's a way too long. It's a song about the things that we talked about in the show with my bro. It's the way it is. It seems to be the favorite part.
Favorite part.
Seems to be the favorite part for
everyone.
That listens in. It's the way we do it.
The way we do it.
Keeping it real.
Keeping it real.
Doing what we feel. Uh-oh. Uh-oh. Yeah, NLcast.com, baby. Check it out.
Check it.
Book
you. Book you.
Hey, this is Wes Tober from Hack Point 5, and you're listening to Geek Cred with Steve Rickyberg.
What type of equipment are you using to shoot and produce this?
I shoot on a Panasonic DVX-100B. I'm using Adobe Premiere to edit. And then I think you know what 3D programs you're using.
Yeah, Arne, do you want to use, go through yours first and I'll list out my stuff.
I'm pretty much doing everything on Softimage XSI. That's the program that I trained on in school, so it's the one I'm most familiar with. And then I composite together all the 3D elements in After Effects and send over the files as target sequences to Jason, and then he adds them in Premiere.
And I use a variety of programs. I use 3D Studio Max for quite a lot of the modeling and the interiors I'm building at the minute. And then exteriors, I'm using View Infinite 5, which is doing the Mars landscape exterior, and we'll be doing the Venus landscape as well. So yeah, Lightwave as well for modeling and general putting together of scenes. And then Combustion for using like a compositing, which is a bit like After Effects, but sort of different type of application.
So how long does it take you to build these models and all this 3D work?
Quite a while.
I would imagine.
Long time.
Yeah. Before you start, you've got to get an idea of what you need to build. So I go on the internet and look at reference graphics to get an idea that what I'm going to build is on the side of believable, not in the sort of, let me think, the Star Trek sort of thing. It's more based around NASA and what the Russian Space Agency could have put together in the future. So I look with 60s technology up to where NASA's going to go in the next 20 or 30 years. Same with the European Space Agency. I'm off to the Leicester Space Place tomorrow, actually, doing some more research.
Yeah, more reference material, the better, the easier it is. Even if you're making something completely new, odds are most of the little bits and pieces that you put together to make it are all existing bits and pieces. So you can take an engine from here and a wing from there, put it all together, and you get something new. But each piece is real. It helps keep it more believable.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the real strengths of the show, is that it's very, very plausible. It's not Star Trek. It's something that is very possible.
Well, that's the one thing that those shows have, that we sort of... I took the challenge of writing Venus Rises because the fact that science has explained these areas, you have to work within those explanations. Warp drive and light speed and transporters, and also set another galaxy far, far away. All those create a palette that's blank that the Gene Roddenberry and George Lucas can use. Here I'm having to, I'm diving back into the solar system where things have been explained, and I have to try to work the plausibility, the believability into everything I write.
Does that make writing for the show a lot more challenging?
Yes, it does. I mean, because of my budget, there are going to be things that I give up to science fiction, only because I can't make the effect or pull the effect off right now.
There are other things for dramatic reasons that you have to bend the rules a little just to make it work on TV.
Now, speaking of TV, you scored in a deal with Illusion TV. How did that happen?
Well, they're an upcoming sci-fi and demand cable TV network, and they were looking for original content, and I guess there's not a lot out. They came to us because the show just had that, just looked original, I guess. Oh, the sets were the big part.
There's a very nice website for the show, and it really does a good job of showing it off.
Julie created the website. She's production manager, web designer, plays Ariana. She does a lot too.
Very multi-talented, it seems.
Everybody has to wear a lot of different hats.
I bet. It's definitely quite a few people to do the show, between actors and editors and new 3D guys. So how did you get all these people and actors and everybody? How did you get them involved in doing the show?
A lot of them are Stevens grads, believe it or not. Three actors from Stevens. Damien went to Stevens. Mike, who plays the Icarus captain, and Rob, who plays the Icarus crewman, both came from Stevens. Oh, and of course, Julia.
So is this just knowing these people, or did you put out a casting call? Or
we've put out casting calls. People really don't show up. What really comprises the acting troupe of Venus Rises are gamers.
Hmm.
Really, everybody pretty much is just an avid D&D, whatever, role-playing gamers, which helps immensely because they are already attuned to the fact of using their imaginations.
Mm-hmm.
They go right into set and they're right there in the moment.
Doing cosplay is only, you know, one step removed from full-on acting, I guess.
That too. Annie, she plays Kilara. She's a cosplayer.
But we've got some actors in there too. Damien did acting back at Stevens.
Oh, that's, so yes. And Joe, too. Joseph, he plays Nathan. He did stage work.
So it's quite a interesting group of people, it seems.
We've been really trying to expand the post-production team. With the news from Illusion, we've been trying to bump ourselves up, because before we were a vidcast series, and I do have the tools, and what we're shooting is broadcast. I was really not going that route. I sort of was using the pixelation of the internet to kind of hide some flaws, but now that we're broadcast, we're having to expand the post-production team immensely.
The show will still be available online, though, right?
Yes. It'll be online for everyone to watch, Innerspace and Series 1. Maybe a week or two after we're on Illusion, we'll release Episode 1 online.
Okay, so it will go up on Illusion first, and then it will go online for everybody else.
Right.
So where do you see the show going?
That really depends if we can create a fan base. I wrote story arcs for the characters that expand out to series 2 and possibly a series 3. I can't wait to play around, because the pilot series, I mean, I wrote it, all four episodes I wrote as one long movie and just split it down in acts. So it's really just a pilot episode. You have to take the time to introduce the characters and what makes them tick. I can't wait to actually dip into series 2 and explore things further, where the characters' relationships with one another have been explained, and you get to play around more in that.
How long is each series going to be?
Well, series 1's 4 episodes, because that's what I could pull off. If the show can get picked up, I can expand series 2 to 6, 12, or 24 episodes.
So you've got all the story planned out already for that. Wow.
Oh, yeah. Series 1, each episode's 20 minutes. It's a very short amount of time to fit in a lot of information, especially when the plot is pushing it forward. So what I do is the Innerspace is a dumping ground to allow me to go back and explore backstories and things that I really didn't have time to in Series 1.
Do you have any tips for any aspiring filmmakers?
Do it. Just grab a camera and go out and shoot.
Well, I guess you got to get started somewhere, so that's definitely some good advice then.
Oh, there's also, if you want to, I'll make a mention that there are acting roles available along with crew positions if they're local around the area.
So what area are you?
Oh, we're in setting down by the Jersey Shore.
And post-production isn't really limited by location.
Oh, no.
Steve Cresshead is over in Great Britain, and I'm up in Vancouver, Canada, so we're really opposite ends.
With the deadlines that we have, we're looking for 3D modelers and 2D animators
and texture artists.
That too.
Anyone that's good with Photoshop is always useful. And it's always good to have more people looking at the same stuff, just to pick out flaws before it goes on air and offer up suggestions and criticisms. That always helps. Input is always good.
So what goes into the designs of these models and stuff to keep it looking so authentic?
Well, it starts with Jason giving us what it is that he wants, and he'll give us a few pointers and show us a few things that are in existence. Like I know with the space station, he was like, well, it's just like the International Space Station is a base, and then I want a big rotating ring. There's no artificial gravity in this show. Everywhere that people are living, because the sets have to have gravity, because it would be very expensive to try and mimic, you know, zero G. Every model has to have something rotating to generate artificial gravity via centrifugal force.
I'm trying to make things that are real, so they're not sort of we're not beaming people up or you know, that sort of thing. So it's all about the detail that makes it look believable.
Definitely. It definitely, I think, kind of sets Venus Rises apart.
The Mars colony, we're using a dome structure, pressurized dome city, and there's an outpost, sort of like a landing strip area, where you'll bring your Mars lander in, and then you'll transfer to the pressurized city or pressurized... there's going to be like city-sized domes, and then smaller ones, depending on what you've got. And some of these dome structures are going to be like gardens or water areas. Some are going to be city areas. So it's quite a pleasant place to live, really. And to contrast that, over on Venus, it's not a nice place to live. The reality of Venus is an incredibly hot and pressurized world that you're trying to exist on. And on the surface of Venus, it's about the same sort of atmospheric pressure as it would be if you were about a kilometer underwater. So you've got 90 atmospheres of pressure on top of you, and it's 400 degrees centigrade. So staying outside on the surface on Venus isn't really much of an option unless you want a very short stay. So the majority of the population are underground, and they're underground doing what they've been asked to do, which is mine for the resources for the lucky people that are going to be over in Mars, taking advantage of all that stuff that's being brought back. So two different worlds, literally, that I need to build. You need to give them a different look so that the viewer knows where they are. And that goes along with the vehicles that are there as well. So any vehicle that will be on Venus will be similar to a deep-sea submarine, like a very strong cylindrical or spherical, highly pressurized type design. Whereas on Mars, you can be a bit more lenient on the design style, so it can be a bit more interesting to look at, not just ball-shaped things and cylinder-shaped things. So, yeah, that's where we're going with that. Hopefully the Venus side will look as nice as how the Mars side is turning out.
Definitely a lot of thought going into these designs.
We're also using a sign language consultant because the character of Ariana is mute, and she uses sign language to communicate. That's another aspect of how we're trying to keep very science fact.
I guess I can talk a little bit about the Icarus. That's one of the main ships from the show. And it's kind of like a very large open sea oil rig. It's this big ship that kind of flies out, looks for an asteroid that's high in mineral content, and then it kind of anchors itself to the asteroid and starts, you know, digging it out. And while it's doing that, it can also move the asteroid, you know, kind of out of the asteroid belt so that it's, so the ship is kind of less subjected to debris hitting it from the asteroid belt. So it's kind of like a cross between a tug and a deep-sea oil rig.
So where can everybody find Venus Rises and get more information?
You'll be able to find more information at our website, www.venusrises.tv.
I want to thank you very much for taking some time to come on the show and talk about Venus Rises. It looks really great. I know I'm looking forward to it, and I want to tell all the listeners to check it out too. All right, thanks,
thank
guys.
Thank you
for having us.
Once again, I want to give some big thanks to J.G. Birdsall and Company from Venus Rises for taking some time out of their busy schedule to come on the show and talk about it. I know I am definitely looking forward to the premiere of Venus Rises. Well, that's going to bring us to the end of this episode of Geek Cred. So if you've got any questions, comments, feedback, flames, email geekcred@geekcred.net, call the voicemail line at 206-424-9125, or visit the website at www.geekcred.net. Geek Cred is a proud member of Friends in Tech. Check out all the great shows over there at www.friendsintech.com. Now, if you like the show, please leave a review on iTunes, vote for us at Podcast Alley, add us to your playlist at Podcast Pickle, or dig us at dig.com. Now, the show is listener supported, so if you like what you're hearing and you can spare a few bucks, please consider donating. You can find PayPal buttons on the website. And if you like the show, hey, consider telling a friend. Maybe they'll like it too. And I've got more great interviews coming up for you guys, but if there's someone you want to see on the show, let me know. Well, that's it for me, so thanks for listening, and until next time, geek on!
If you've had the feeling that someone is watching you, creeping up when you're not looking, that something twisted is waiting for you, deep in the shadows. I've got good news, and I've got bad news. The good news is, you're not crazy. The bad news is...
Scott Sigler wants to kill you. You could be a victim in Scott's newest horror thriller, Nocturnal, which launches at midnight Eastern Standard Time on October 31st. That's right, bitches. At the stroke of midnight on Halloween. So, you wanna die? Register a profile now at scottsigler.com to win a chance to hear your name as a corpse. Fill in all the fields and don't forget your picture, because Scott wouldn't want to kill the wrong person. Then he'd just have to kill you all.